Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. My name is Matt Hester, and welcome back. And on this episode of TechNet Radio, we have Todd Gardner from TrackJS to talk to us about how his startup is leveraging BizSpark and Azure and all the great technologies underneath the covers. But before we get that, Todd, why don't you introduce yourself and tell the folks a little bit about who you are and a little bit about TrackJS.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really looking forward to it. So about 18 months ago, along with a few partners, I started a company called TrackJS, which is a JavaScript error tracking service. So the problem that we try and solve is that a lot of the people watching the show, you probably have logging and instrumentation for your server side, for your infrastructure. That's a well-established and a solved problem, and I'm sure there's tons of great tools you've talked about with that. But the client side, what's running in the browsers is still kind of the Wild West. And there's not a lot of good solutions to understand when does that fail for your users. So most applications people are building today have some client-side component, like they might be using Knockout or Backbone or Angular or some combination thereof to make some interactivity or some client-side rendering or something happen in the browser. But when that blows up, if the ops people, if we're lucky to even know that it happened, it's usually a very terse and uninformed error. And so that's what we're trying to fix. We try to give the operations and the developers information about how customers actually ran into failures in their client-side code with enough information that they could actually fix the error when they find out about it.
So it helps kind of solve that problem because, you know, me being an infrastructure guy, you know, it's like, no, it's your code. And the coders look at me and says, no, it's your ops, it's your infrastructure. So we have the, you know, pointing finger both way. And it very well may be that the error side that you find on the client very well may be a bad infrastructure implementation, or it might be a bad code implementation, correct?
Yeah, it could be any number of things, because when the user is actually interacting with the browser application, they're going through the entire stack of both the code you control and the infrastructure you control, but also all of the things that are just happening in the internet. If there's an internet storm going on, or maybe somebody is just on a crappy like edge network connection on their phone, or any number of things, maybe they installed like some invasive plugin in their browser, there could be any number of things that are causing their actual end user experience to go wrong. And so that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to give a more complete picture that says, you know, here's some information about how the application changed. And here's some information about what was going on with the network. And then here's some information about how the visitor was actually interacting with your app. And we combine that with, here was the browser environment that was actually being used. And we can deliver all of that information back so that the ops people can look at this thing that happened and hopefully recreate the same scenario and be able to debug the issue.
And really, that's the key of it. It's like figuring out, it's like, hey, we don't want to blame each other, because I don't think at the end of the day, when developers give us code from an infrastructure and when we put it on the, we don't want it to break, right? We want our users to be happy. In whichever direction that takes us, let's just solve the problem. Let's fix it. Let's move on and let's get inside of it and then solve those primary issues that are there. So have you ever been surprised about some of the things that some of your things have tracked down before? Some messages people or customers of yours that said, hey, this is a problem that it found. You're like, wow, I didn't even know that could be a problem.
Absolutely. So just about every customer who's ever put us in their production app has been surprised by the number of errors that happen, because there's so much that is outside of our control. We tend to think that, like, if I have my server set up in this particular way and I've written my code in this particular way, that this is how it's going to act. But when you release something out into the internet, there is at least 50% of the things that happen that are totally beyond your control. Like, how does that actual browser implementation act, and how did the end user manipulate it? And what kind of platform are they on? Is it Windows and Mac, or how much processing power did they give it compared to how you tested it? And then what network are they sitting on? And all of these factors come together to show you how the end user is actually experiencing your application. And making that better is the ultimate goal of everybody involved, because we're trying to make them happy. We're trying to get them to sign up as a customer, or tell their boss to sign us up as a customer, or whatever the situation might be. We need to make them happy so that they don't click off and, you know, go to Facebook, or worse, go to a competitor.
Yeah, well, and you think about that, that's important, right? Because most developers, and when we test applications in production, we're on good, fairly solid computers, a lot of memory, a lot of processor. We have really good network connections. And, you know, we can go into the developer tools and we can render the different browsers. Oh, yeah, this will work in Chrome. It'll work in Safari. It'll work in IE. But the fact of the matter is when you give it to somebody and you put it on the client side, well, they're coming from a 56K connection using, you know, IE5 or whatever was, you know, I just forgot the name of the browser. It was all text-based. What was the name of the browser? It was all text-based way back when.
Lynx.
Lynx. There you go. Thank you. See, or they're using that. You're like, wait, why is my JavaScript? Well, it doesn't support it. So when you can see those types of things, I think that's an invaluable kind of service. So now how does this, do you give like your customers an agent or do you test their websites? Do you go to everybody's house that you deliver to, like all your clients' house and say, hey, how's this app work for you? How do you
guys
actually do it?
I have an army of people looking over everybody's shoulders as they're browsing your website. And
oh, awesome. Perfect.
Notes.
Wait. No, I don't see anybody back there. Well, I'm not browsing yet because I'm actually recording this thing, but I'm just checking. Now you got me paranoid, man. I'm an IT guy.
So we do something very similar to what you would do with like a Google Analytics type tool, where we give you a little tracking agent, which is just a small JavaScript library that you include on the page that you ship down to the client. And JavaScript is a really, really powerful language, way more powerful than people understand, because with what a lot of TrackJS does is we replace a lot of the browser API itself so that we can listen in on how your client-side application and how the user is interacting with the browser. And we can record those sort of events and errors so that we can stream that information back to our infrastructure when a problem happens.
Okay, now where is your infrastructure? We were talking a little bit before this. You started kind of on an infrastructure solution. What did that look like? Because I know you've evolved, and we'll talk about that in a second, of some of the decisions why you went where you went. But kind of talk about where you began and how you did this from a technical problem. Because it sounds like it's a great solution to really help out people to write code and write better, more efficient websites. So people like me, when they visit them, don't leave.
Yeah, that's the whole idea. So TrackJS is a bootstrap startup. And so what that basically means is this was an idea that my partners and I had to do, but we didn't go off and get a bunch of venture funding or have, you know, some wealthy great uncle like give us, you know, a couple million dollars to make this happen. We've been building this in our as time allows over the last 18 months. And what really changes you as a technology professional is when you're working for a big enterprise or a big company, there's very deep pockets and very long schedules, and you can afford to think about things in different ways. When the infrastructure cost and when all of those things are coming on out of your credit card, you have a little bit different ways you think about things to how do you learn how to do this? How do you figure out if you have a market? How do you figure out if this thing that you've built is valuable? And so when we first started, I'm kind of embarrassed about our solution. We started on Azure. Because all of us are, you know, .NET developers. We were familiar with Windows platforms. We were familiar with C# languages, that sort of thing. And we started real simple. We had a single virtual machine out on Windows Azure. I think it was a small virtual machine. And we installed SQL Server on it. And we installed IIS on it on the same box. And we just stood up this MVC app and it talked to SQL Server. And that was it. And we stood it up, and we started bringing our first customers on. What that allowed us to do is the stand-up time to learn if this was a good idea was really, really fast because we were using the technologies we already knew. We didn't have to learn any new interfaces. But as I'm sure everybody listening already completely understands, that box fell over on itself really, really, really fast. As soon as we had, like, a legitimate customer sending us like a lot of data, that thing could not keep up. It just melted. It wouldn't respond. I don't even think we could recover it. I think we had to rebuild the whole thing from scratch. Real load.
It reminds me of that commercial that had all the, you know, it looked like a young startup company sitting around a laptop and they were talking about cloud technologies and the overture and everybody's high-fiving, and when it got to like 5,000 hits, the site crashed on itself and everybody was sad. Like, yeah, it's working. No, it's crashed. So I'm glad it's done. Now, was this Azure via BizSpark, or did you do Azure before you were aware of BizSpark, or do they kind of come along at the same time?
We were aware of Azure before BizSpark, but BizSpark is what really enabled us to get going. Because when you're a team and you have an idea sitting around and you're like, all right, how, let's set up a box to like get this thing going. Before you know if it's a good idea or not, even the smallest amount of investment makes the whole thing feel kind of scary. And so even to just, you know, set up a box and like register domain names and get like source control and just all of the basics of getting things going required a fair amount of capital investment. Not like astronomical amount, but like, hey, we're, you know, dipping into savings accounts and like taking money out, and it's all just kind of scary. And so BizSpark allowed us to reduce that anxiety quite a bit. Not that we couldn't have done it without BizSpark at that stage, but the fact that they said, you know what, you can just have the box. Just go ahead, like, figure this thing out, see if it's a good idea, and that we didn't have to worry about it was amazing. And it really, like, it empowered us to do this thing that would have been scarier without them.
Well, and I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I think every startup's like, all of a sudden it becomes real when you start having to write checks for everything. And BizSpark kind of alleviates that, especially with the Azure benefits are there and the multiple subscriptions you get for all the different tools. So in addition to Azure, what other aspects of the BizSpark program have you found that you really liked? Were you surprised it was in there, or were you just happy with the full MSDN subscriptions that were available to you?
The full MSDN was very, very helpful. So one of my partners and I were our .NET developers kind of on the side doing contracting gigs. And so we had access to, you know, Microsoft licenses to do things. But I'm not a licensing expert, and so I don't really know what the gray area is there between, hey, I have a license for me to consult with my clients and use Visual Studio. Can I set up my own thing and charge people for it? Is that still covered? And so BizSpark just made it so we didn't have to think about that. They're just like, yep, fine, here's all the stuff, you're good to go, don't worry about it.
Go forth and prosper and build something in Azure.
Right, and don't worry that Microsoft is going to come after you later and say, hey, you owe us, you know, a lot of money for these licenses.
Well, it's only if you make a lot of money, right? I mean, that's how it works.
Yeah.
Which we hope happens. I mean, it's a win-win thing.
Yeah, and that's what... So I've had a few conversations with other startup people. I really hate that when I'm in a startup kind of group, and people ask me, like, what our platform is built on, and I say, hey, we're built on .NET, we host on Azure. And there's almost, like, this uncool thing that they give me, like, oh, you're not hosted on with Node or, you know, whatever. And I really dislike that culture exists, because we could accelerate way faster because we had all of these free licenses to well-established Microsoft technologies. And we have them for a long enough time period that we can prove out that this thing exists, that this thing is a viable company or not. And if it isn't, great, we just close it down and we've learned a bunch of stuff. If it is, hopefully we've made a significant enough amount of money that we can pay for those licenses and it's not a big deal. If the cost of the licenses for Microsoft Tech is the feather that's going to, like, destroy your company's profitability, it probably wasn't all that profitable to begin with. And so that's what I really liked about it.
Well, and that, so what led you, I mean, you were a .NET developer, obviously, when you started developing, it's kind of funny, you're a .NET developer fixing JavaScript problems, which is just kind of an interesting dynamic. I mean, how did you come to that? Why did you try to choose the Microsoft stack, you know, Azure and BizSpark aside for a second, over the other technologies like Node and some of the other, what I would call the cool kid tools, where our tools are enterprise class ready kind of tools, but not seen as cool. But I think it's cool. You know, I'm an Azure guy. I love Azure. I've been here for 14 years. I think it's great. So what were some of those decisions that you had that kind of said, hey, this really is the right solution for us above and beyond that you're already .NET developers?
So what we did is the founders were C# developers. That was the language that we were most comfortable in, and we'd been developing it for years. We'd kind of migrated from C# into JavaScript land along with the JavaScript renaissance that's been happening, where more and more mature tooling is coming up around JavaScript. But that's a choice or it's not really a choice for building a modern web application. You have to write JavaScript. If you want to build interactivity in the client side, that's kind of the only viable alternative right now. But on the server side, you have lots of choices. We could write in .NET, we could write in Node, we could write in Python, we could write in Ruby, and all of these different technologies have different pros and cons. The big thing for us wasn't whether or not The big question we needed to answer was whether or not this business was viable. And the fastest way for us to answer that question was to use the tech stack that we were most familiar with. There might have been other platforms that might be more suitable to solve some different parts of our platform, but we knew .NET. We were good at .NET. We were familiar with .NET. And so we could answer these questions really, really fast. So once we had kind of our software side platform picked, we looked into how do we host this. And we really just needed a virtual machine as our first go. And so there's lots of providers for that. We could have gone to Azure. We could have gone to Amazon. We could have gone to DigitalOcean. We could have gone a bunch of different places. But Azure combined with, hey, here's BizSpark, and we'll support you, and hey, the local evangelists were like on our side and like helping us out, and the whole stack were just like, who could run a Windows box better than Microsoft, and Microsoft is willing to give it to us for free. So, yeah, that was the choice.
Well, that's excellent, right? I mean, it kind of gives you that idea of some of the decisions as you go out there in the different platforms, and that's perfect. That's kind of what we were hoping you'd say, and kind of go with those different technologies, especially the different choices when you're standing up virtual machines. But something you told me as we were starting before we got on this call and we started recording, you said, I mean, you've kind of evolved your platform. You've moved it from IaaS to a PaaS environment. And I think this is, of all things, since you chose Azure, how was that move? Because I know you've kind of evolved solutions. Let's talk about that a little bit. But that move probably wasn't as hard as people might think it is, because we're all within the confines of Azure. Was it easy, or was it hard, or challenges that you're still running into?
It was pretty easy. Like, we didn't do a big bang thing. So part of being, you know, a small shop is we solve the immediate problems. And so, like I was saying before, you know, our first iteration was just that single virtual machine, and that fell over real fast. And so we had to figure out, well, the parts that we were having problems scaling were, how fast can we ingest data? Like, how fast can customers send us data? Then how do we store that data? And then how do we report off of that data? So those were our three kind of like scaling problems that we had to figure out. And so our first kind of foray into the Azure platform was through the storage technology. So the storage queues and storage tables. Because those allowed for us to shove into them data so fast that we didn't need to really solve like a scaling problem ourselves. We just said, hey, what if rather than trying to persist this thing right away, we just shoved it in a queue? Well, can the queue keep up? And so we set up some tests to, you know, simulate how fast we could push data in. And Azure never even broke a sweat when we were firing stuff into queues. And in fact, we're still using that pattern today. We capture error data in off of the wire and we shove it into an Azure queue. And then we would store at this particular iteration, we were storing our error data in Azure storage tables, which was equally fast, and we could do tons of cool stuff. And it wasn't any fault of Azure, but that didn't solve our last problem, is we couldn't report off of the data fast enough, right? The Azure storage tables are really good for a certain kind of data, but if I want to run a query that says, hey, tell me or aggregate all of the errors that I have, tell me how many of them came from Firefox. There's no good way to do that with storage tables without pulling the entire list into memory, which is not doable. And so we ended up migrating further away from that into Elasticsearch, which is a non-Microsoft tech, but we run it in Azure, which is really cool. We also have pushed into cloud services. So when we're ingesting data, we take it and we shove it into a queue. But we need something to actually process these errors and say, hey, is this from a valid customer? What does it look like? Run some analytics on it, you know, produce some information. And so that was a scaling problem for us, is we need, as we were growing and as customers would put us on larger and larger websites, we needed more and more capability to do that. And so cloud services was the option that we picked with that. And we picked it largely because the API was really, really easy for us. Like, we could just start up or spin up a cloud service. It was just a simple like wrapper shell we put around the existing code we already had. We didn't have to change our code very, very, very slightly to make this whole thing happen. And now we can scale this thing literally by just going to the console and saying, hey, all right, I want six of these things now. Boop, done. There's six of them. Well, I mean, there's like 15, 20 minutes of like stuff happening, but it's instant enough for our purposes that it doesn't require a whole lot of time and effort to make the whole thing happen. And then more recently, we've started pushing into websites. So we've branched our application off, and we've actually split the concepts of taking data in, like that front door capturing an error, from our API and from our web UI are now three separate things. And we use websites to handle that because each of those things scales at a different rate. We need to scale up capture every time we get a new batch of customers, whereas our UI doesn't have to scale up quite as fast. That's just about how many unique developers need to look at our stuff at any given time.
And really, you got a lot of flexibility with all the new stuff coming in and different ways to help process that. It's going to get nothing but better. So it sounds like you got a really good eye in the future. Like, hey, this is what we're going to solve the problem today, but there might be something else to help it down the road. I know, Todd, you're willing to show us a little bit of kind of how this looks at a high level. Now, you know, we're talking IT guys, so we don't need the code stuff, but can we get an idea of what the solution looks like?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to show you a little demo. All right, so this is the basic dashboard of TrackJS that kind of gives a high-level view of how your web application is doing right now. So TrackJS captures both the errors that we bring in off of your client side, but as well as the hits. So how many unique times did a user, you know, load your application? And so we compare a lot of the dashboards around comparing those two numbers to tell you, are you getting better or are you getting worse? So the errors per hit is just for every given hit to your application, how often is the user encountering an error? And the error rate is just how fast we're pulling it in. And then we can compare that with how you were doing 24 hours previously. This is for largely like checking if environmental changes have improved or if a code change has made it better. Or maybe you've just done a different, you've targeted a different class of user and you're wanting to see how they're performing. We break down a bunch of information into showing you what were the top browsers, pages, and messages that your end users encountered. So you can drill in and see those specific errors. So, for example, if we dig into some of these, here's probably the most common error on the internet. It's script error, which is very uninformative. It doesn't tell you a whole lot about what's going on. But what we do is we have this thing that we call the telemetry timeline. And this is all the extra information, the extra events that we're capturing about what's happening. And so we know that, hey, when the user landed on this page, they were running, you know, Mac OS X and running Firefox 31. And they landed on this page slash social. And when they did, your application printed some context messages because we enable you to actually write good logging information client-side. We know that the application made this AJAX call against your API and how long it took. And we understand what the user did. So I know that they entered 16 characters into this field and hit a button. But then this blew up with script error. And like, I don't know what that means. That doesn't give me a whole lot of information. So one of the things we do is for known issues, we give you this thing called solutions. So there's, you know, a dozen or so known errors that, like, if we encounter this thing, TrackJS, we know the solution to it. And so we'll give it right up to you. Script error, for example, is a browser security thing of the script that originated this error was loaded from a different domain. And the browser intentionally obfuscated the error. And so here's a bunch of solutions for how to turn that off, how to avoid that particular issue. And so we give that back to you. We're also capturing a bunch of other things, like what are the other JavaScript libraries on the page, so you know what particular versions, and allowing you to group by various different things. So, for example, I know that, hey, there was this customer that we tagged called Huge Customer. I could go in and see, here's all the errors that Huge Customer encountered over their sessions. And so in this particular case, they had kind of a bad time of things. So we can drill in and we can see all kinds of different information about different errors, looking at their telemetry information. In this case, looking at the stack trace, so we can actually see where their code failed. And in some cases, we can see...
Sorry. So really what you're looking at here is you're looking for that, Todd, is that you have kind of your own internal knowledge base that you're able to see those error messages. It's kind of almost like, you know, when we had event view, event IDs inside of our servers, we have a fairly well knowledge base, but you're putting it all within context of what the user was doing right at that time. That's awesome. That's a great way to help solve that problem because, you know, just like anything, an error in ID might indicate that, hey, you're running out of hard drive, but you might run out of hard drive because your page file is too big because you're out of memory, or it could be something like that. I think it's a great way to look at, especially when you look at JavaScript and a lot of those nondescript errors, it's a great way to look at it.
Yeah, and we give you capabilities so that you can link what's happening in your client side back to your own server side instrumentation. So you can provide information like what an internal session ID is. Maybe you're correlating your application level logs or your infrastructure logs to, you know, who was logged in at the time. And so this allows you to correlate that back together. What I wanted to show you is that in some cases where, you know, the moons align and your code links up to the error, we can show you the actual code that caused this particular error, or where the error emerged from your code, which we think is actually really, really interesting, and we think it's going to help a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of gives them the pointer, and once again, it helps solve that problem. It could be something in the code that's run into a firewall that's being blocked on the infrastructure side, or it could just be something that's a little bit of a bad piece of code, and it's going to really help folks move forward. That's a great solution, especially for JavaScript.
Yeah, we think so. So TrackJS is ready to sign up right now. We charge a monthly service fee for capturing and aggregating this data. And we bill based on hits, so how busy your site is. The busier your site is, the more successful your site is, the higher the tier of our service you need to go in for us to track your information. But this is ready. It's ready to go. We're capturing today about 100 errors a second and about 5,000 or 6,000 hits per second in our infrastructure today. So we're on some very, very, very large public websites in e-commerce and content and advertising and other software as a service platforms. So we're doing really well, and you should check us out.
Oh, fantastic. Todd, thanks for showing us this solution. Oh, that was a fantastic highlight. It looks like you just a ton of information in there, Todd. And you showed your website was live and ready. So where can folks learn more about it? I saw trackjs.com is where they can go. What other areas do you have a blog, or do you have a forum where people can kind of just chat with you if they're not quite sure if it's the right solution for y'all?
Yeah, absolutely. So trackjs.com has all the information, and there's a blog off of there at trackjs.com/blog. We're also really active on Twitter. Our handle is just trackjs. If you have specific questions or you want to get in on an extended trial offer that I'm going to offer your audience, if anybody who's watching wants to get in for 2 months for free, you can just email me, Todd, T-O-D-D, at trackjs.com, and I'll set you up with an extended trial.
Oh, fantastic. We get free stuff and some good solutions all running
absolutely.
On Azure. Absolutely. And all running on, the best part about this, it's all running on Azure and BizSpark, folks. So when you think about the BizSpark benefits, if you're a startup out there and you're looking to do some businesses, think about what Azure can do. And if you outline the first solution that Todd set up, which is just a virtual machine, yeah, there's lots of people that can do that. But when you saw where his solution is growing because of the scalability needs he had, he's tying into 3 or 4 different areas inside of Azure to really enable that solution. So help your company take the next step, folks. If you haven't signed up for BizSpark or looked at it, please do so. You can see what we're doing with it. And even the technologies that we have, even though he's a .NET developer, it can do things for Java technologies. And if he wasn't a .NET developer, if he wrote another code, you could do it all on Azure as well. So a little bit of shout out for that. And so, Todd, I just want to say thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to come talk to our folks about your solution. And have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thanks for having me on.